faith, spiritual values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
Welcome. Glad you are with us. Well, I don't do this very often, and that is take an interview from television and bring it over onto radio. But I had two very, very important interviews yesterday. One was with Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA. Dr. Robert Malone. All of you know his name, right? You've all been seeing him around. Well, I had the opportunity to interview him live last night, and I would like to play some of that for you today. And if time allows, I'd then like to play some audio for you from my interview with the Attorney General of Texas. Texas has a really weird situation. They have what is called the, bifurcated court system. It's a court of criminal appeals, and then they have the Texas Supreme Court. An article at Town Hall describes it this way: the Division of Labor is supposed to get Texans better legal results. Civil lawyers take the bench on the Supreme Court and handle civil matters, while criminal lawyers take the bench on the Court of Criminal Appeals and handle criminal matters. And it's kind of an odd situation. But these judges on the Court of Criminal Appeals are mostly B-team players whose sole audience is the overwhelming liberal criminal law bar. Turns out that they're Republicans. Turns out that these guys are Republicans, and they're voting to strip the Attorney General of what is like 100 plus years, 120 years of authority. Would stop him from being able to investigate voter fraud. Do you hear what I'm saying, folks? It would stop the Attorney General from being able to investigate voter fraud in the state of Texas. And then you add the fact that you have all of these liberal district attorneys and county attorneys, like in Austin and other places, many of them who there is reason to believe that they are backed by George Soros. And then these people can start doing all the crazy vote rigging they want to do or have it done. And then their puppets, their district attorney puppets, do nothing about it. They watch it happen. They let it happen. Maybe they encourage it. Maybe. And what's the Attorney General of Texas going to do? Well, if this stands, he won't be able to do anything about it. In other words, you will watch Texas fall. Now you say, well, I don't live in Texas. No, but when it comes to federal elections, that impacts all of us. They start winning Texas. They start stealing Texas. They start stealing Florida. You can kiss the Electoral College goodbye. This is about federal elections, folks, which means that impacts every one of us. And I had the privilege and honor last night of interviewing the Attorney General of Texas about it. And he says this is a huge threat, not only to Texas, but to the entire country. And once again, who's doing it to us? So-called Republicans. Isn't that interesting? I want to try to leave some time for that. So if we're going to leave some time for that, we need to hurry on to the interview I conducted yesterday with Dr. Robert Malone that really needs to go out over these 60 blowtorch stations of VCY America because people need to hear this as much as possible. Here's my interview with Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Malone, thank you so much for making time for us this evening here on Lindell TV.
Thank you very much, Brandon, for the opportunity to be here and join you and your audience.
Well, thank you. The honor is all ours. I want to mention several times here something you have coming up here in the next few days. I'll let you obviously speak more to it, but it's the mandates are not American. That's the headline. The mandates are not American. The website is defeatthemandates.com, defeatthemandates.com. You guys say, free to work, free to travel, free to learn, free to question, free to speak, free to pray, free to say no. This is going to be a big deal. It's going to be held in Washington, D.C., correct?
Yes, sir.
When? Who's speaking and how many are you expecting?
Sunday the 23rd. Who's speaking? We got a large roster of people. We're still finalizing a couple of key folks. Bobby Kennedy will be there. I'll be there. Pierre Corey will be there. We have many others, but we're in. And Steve Kirsch is going to introduce a number of individuals that are vaccine injured from this particular vaccine product.
All right, so defeatthemandates.com for more information. Any idea how many you expect to be there?
We're currently, I hesitate to say this, I'm a little afraid, but it looks like it might go big, like 800,000, perhaps more.
Wow. Okay, we're going to definitely be covering it. We're even trying to figure out about how to get a camera there, to be honest with you. Defeatthemandates.com. His regular website is rwmalonemd.com. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Okay, that's what we'll put up under his name, his main website, rwmalonemd.com. All right, we're on limited time here, so I'm going to start firing the questions at you. I listened to an interview you did this afternoon, and you said catastrophe of death, catastrophic death, disease, and disabilities. That's what's occurring. The likes the world has never seen. America has never seen this. Or the insurance companies have never seen this. Can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, there's another report coming out now. I was just reading a moment ago, so thanks for teeing that up. So we had a report from one major life insurance company in the upper Midwest suggesting, and this is a $3 billion life insurance company, from the CEO, suggesting that we've had a 40% increase in deaths, and only a fraction of those are being attributed to the COVID disease. So the rest is due to something else. And what was intriguing about that particular report, and is now being duplicated by other insurance groups, life insurance groups, is that the this incidence was occurring in a what appears to be a highly vaccinated population, that being the employed who are obtaining their life insurance through their employment, because that's what this particular insurer focuses on. Now, there's another case of an insurance company in France, I believe, I was just reading about, that is indicating that they're not going to cover COVID deaths because they know, or the vaccine-related deaths, because they know that there's been well-documented evidence of death associated with COVID, and so if people take the vaccines, they're doing so knowingly, and so therefore they're not covered. They place themselves at risk by taking the vaccines. Interesting logic. So I think that what's interesting to this audience, I can say these things, we have a situation in which the government has been manipulating data and numbers for political reasons. But, you know, the insurance actuary, you can't lie to them. They're dealing with very large data, and they're dealing with the fact that they're going to have to pay out on all these events. And they track cause of death, and they track incidents and very closely. So there's no shell game with the bear system saying, oh, those aren't verified deaths or whatever. Insurers have to document what's driving this, and they have to make clear decisions. They're talking about raising rates significantly for life insurance as a consequence. I think we can say that at a minimum, the Biden management of this has been a colossal failure. The Biden-Fauci decisions about how to manage this, suppressing early treatment, insisting that everybody get multiple vaccine doses, as whatever you think, attribution to the vaccines or not, the morbidity and mortality here is stunning.
Before we get into the lab in Wuhan and the CIA and several things I've heard you speak about, I want to ask you about here. Just very quickly for the lay people, when you're called the inventor of the mRNA, explain to us what that means, and was this technology somehow hijacked by Fauci and team for what they're doing now?
So what it means is that when I was a graduate student and then an employee of a company called Vi-Cal, first at the Salk Institute as a graduate student, then Vi-Cal over a 3.5-year span, I developed a suite of technologies, filed patent disclosures, and had 9 patents issued from that work, all of which have my name on it. And in that includes the first reproduction to practice of using mRNA as a vaccine. The mRNA was expressing the AIDS, HIV protein, GP120, the envelope-like protein of HIV. So that's what it means. And of course, this press disputes this, and they say they never talk about the issued patents. And has Fauci and company hijacked it? It's technology that's been out there for well over 30 years. The patents expired. It was technology bought by Merck, and they did everything they could to keep anybody else from developing it, but they were never able to make any products out of it. They completely failed. But what they did succeed at is keeping anybody else from developing products. So then the patents expired, and there was suddenly an explosion of companies starting to develop this tech. And in the case of Moderna, for instance, that explosion was driven by money from DARPA.
Let's talk about DARPA. We want to always make sure we're bringing the audience along, and I bet we've got a lot of new people watching tonight. What is DARPA?
Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. So these are the people that invented the internet. They also invented the SR-71. Fascinating agency of the Department of Defense, and it's kind of at the junction between DOD and CIA. It has been for decades. They're the ones responsible for taking on the most risky technology development products and projects that the United States government funds. They have a policy that they expect about 80% of what they fund to fail. They want high-risk project candidates, and they take a lot of risks to develop those, and that leads to the big breakthroughs. They also drove much of the modern biotech revolution in terms of manufacturing process. That was another. So it's down in the weeds, but the use of bags as opposed to stainless steel tanks and wave and things, these technologies for manufacturing, they all came out of DARPA projects.
Wow. So this is kind of a merging of the military-industrial complex and the intelligence community, the CIA?
I think that's an interesting way to look at it. I think there's a lot of merit to that.
So tell me, what are your thoughts about the CIA is when it comes to the Wuhan lab? I know that we're told by having interviewed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on his excellent book on the real Anthony Fauci, he talks about the CIA and how you keep finding their hands and stuff, and that they were involved in the October 2019 Event 201 planning for a pandemic that they knew had already begun a month earlier. And every time you turn around, you keep finding the CIA, the military-industrial complex, DARPA. What is the ultimate goal of these deep staters?
I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't be sitting here in Spain broadcasting with you. I don't know. It's hard to sort out that what they're doing is advancing U.S. political interests, but U.S. geostrategic interests. I don't know how to answer your question. It's perplexing for all of us, I think. Have they lost their way? Have they been captured by other interests? If I was in a position of political authority, that's certainly something I'd want to get to the bottom of. And let's hope that if the Senate flips, that my good friend Ron Johnson is able to turn over enough stones so that we can find the critters crawling out.
We're going to hold it right there. My interview with Dr. Robert Malone. And again, if time allows, I want to get to a little bit of the interview I did with the Attorney General of Texas last night. Something that is an existential threat, not only to the state of Texas, but to the whole country when we're talking about federal elections. It's Worldview Radio. We're on the VCY America Radio Network. For those of you listening on Frank Speech, it's vcyamerica.org. back. Glad you're with us, Worldview Radio. We're going to get right back to my interview with Dr. Robert Malone. And again, I don't normally take my TV shows and put them on radio, but these interviews are so important. This one and the one I did with the Attorney General of Texas, I'm hoping time will allow. So these are so important. We wanted to get these out there over the 60 stations of VCY America Radio Network. And again, as I was saying before the break, I would encourage Frank Speech and Lindell TV folks to check out the great treasure of VCY America Radio Network, great Christian radio network, Bible teaching and music. VCYAmerica.org is their website. And I've been working with them for over 25 years. Started working with them in 1995. I think it was when I first spoke at their first VCY America rally, was in 1995. So I've been working with them a long, long time. All right, let's go back to my interview with Dr. Robert Malone. Is it money for some? Is it power? Is it depopulation? Is it eugenics? Is it tagging and tracking? Or for some, all the above? And like any war, it's fought. Different people fight the same war for different reasons. But do any of those, I mean, I actually heard you, and I agree with you, I heard you bring up the World Economic Forum in a recent interview and talk about the fact that some of these people, they clearly tell you, they want a world government.
Yeah, so I think, and to what extent is our government, and as you refer to deep state, these bureaucrats that are so deeply embedded, to what extent are they aligned with WEF agendas as opposed to those that are more focused on United States as an independent nation state? There does seem to, it's hard to explain the information that I see, and I think many of us see, without taking into account these ideas of transnational organizations like WEF, and the very large funds that are now decoupled from nation state. They're in a position, these large funds such as BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, etc., where they have the power to crush national economies. And if you have the power to destroy the economy of a nation, you control it. And it does seem like this vision of 20 or more years ago that I remember learning about as a young student, in which the concept of nation state becomes obsolete. It does seem like we're moving, for whatever reason, towards that endpoint.
It really does. You've mentioned that the government is lawless. You've said this in another interview, that the government is now lawless. It's really interesting because, Dr. Malone, I had four high-ranking retired FBI agents here in the Mid-South November 11th doing 4 one-hour town halls. One of them, who's become a very good friend the last year and a half, 2 years, is the former assistant deputy director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI. He was one of the three guys standing there the day they knocked on the Unabomber's cabin door and arrested him. And he's become a good friend. And I was a little shocked. I agree, but I was a little shocked, but I was pleased. He said it on camera, sitting right to my left on November 11th as we were filming that town hall. The former assistant deputy director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI, Terry Turchie, said, "We are now living under lawlessness. This is now lawlessness." I've heard you use the same thing. These are highly educated men, yourself and Terry Turchie and others, now saying this. If our government is lawless, is it also involved in genocide?
So now you're touching on another hot topic of whether or not we really have crimes against humanity. I think with the disclosures that the major provided to Veritas Project, as I've looked over those documents, they look sound, they look real to me, they feel real. They can still be a false flag operation. I mean, the CIA has amazing resources, as does DARPA, but they feel right, they look right, they sound right within the context. And if we're in a situation where we have got Tony Fauci, Francis Collins, the head of the Wellcome Trust, Jeremy Farrar, and by the way, there's a fantastic essay in Epoch Times where there's a dissection of Jeremy Farrar's book in which he clearly describes that he and Tony and Francis Collins got burner phones to discuss with each other what they were going to do about the possibility that this is, and the probability that this was, a lab leak from a synthetic virus. I think if that gets tied down by the senator, and I'm sure he's going to get to the bottom of this, then we really as I said in another Substack, it's looking like Reiner Fulmich's charges about crimes against humanity, which seemed chaotic at the time, are just becoming more and more and more verified and valid almost by the day. And I do think that it's getting time where it's inescapable that there must be some accountability. And I believe that accountability must include legal action against these actors.
The term Nuremberg Code, the Nuremberg Code keeps being brought up. Is that, what are your thoughts
there?
Well,
so I completely agree, and I've been saying this for at least half a year now, probably a year. You probably haven't tracked my evolution here, but I started off focusing on the bioethics. Nuremberg Code says you cannot administer an unlicensed product without full consent to patients. This is what Mengele was doing.
Right.
I mean, a case can be made that Tony Fauci is a modern-day Josef Mengele.
We have said it right from this desk. I agree 100%.
On a massive, massive scale.
Yep. Yep. Did we get here in part due to the propaganda of the PCR test?
That's interesting. The PCR test certainly played into the ability of the government to scare everyone. And we now know from people in the UK, for instance, that were involved in governmental psyops intended to scare the population, to nudge or modify it towards behaving in ways that the government wished, that there was intentional fear campaigns. And the decision by the CDC to label anyone who could be detected as PCR positive with this flawed test that had a very high false positive rate, anybody that was detected as PCR positive, number one, they would get that hospital that held those persons would get a financial bonus. So there was a financial incentive to calling people PCR positive in hospitals. And if they died and they were PCR positive, whatever their cause of death, true cause of death was, they were listed as having the cause of death of corona, SARS-CoV-2. And so we clearly had major inflation in the death rates, and that's now coming out too. And that was used to impose the emergency declaration and to propagate the fear and propagate these lockdowns and other measures that have just destroyed the economy, destroyed lives, destroyed families, and all for what agenda? To push vaccination? Or is it a bigger agenda? It's hard to say.
And by the way, I'm going to give the website again, defeatthemandates.com. This weekend is their big rally coming up in Washington, D.C., defeatthemandates.com. Dr. Malone will be speaking, obviously. I think Dr.
I think it's defeatthemandatesdc.com, isn't it?
Double-check that, will you, Logan, please, and let me know before we go off the air so we can get it right. Text it to me if you would, Logan. We'll double-check it. His other websites are rwmalonemd.com, rwmalonemd.com. Help me with this one, Doc. Unityprojectonline.com, is that right?
Correct. That's the one. The Unity Project is focused on the children. Remember, for most of us, we've already had our reproductive lives. We've been able to make conscious decisions. There's a large fraction of the population that has consciously decided not to take vaccines, and there's those who have accepted it. But forcing our children to take these products that can potentially damage their lives
yes.
for the rest of their lives is wrong. And that is where I've drawn the line personally. That's the hill I'll die on if I can, if I have the opportunity. This is absolutely the line for me, is to stop these forced vaccinations of our children. They're innocent. They're not part of a political battle. And it never before have we had a situation in which we were forcing the children to accept an unlicensed medical product to protect the elderly. This is insane.
How much do you think this is going to impact young girls being able to conceive children? We are talking to a lot of college students in our area. A lot of the guys that work in our control room are college age. Some of their friends, the males, are getting the shot. Their female friends are getting the shot. Some of them have to get it to play sports and travel.
What is the infertility rate going to look like with America's young people in the coming years?
So this is one of the kind of sick, sad things here is we don't know the answer. The FDA did not force the developers to do the proper tests about fertility and birth defects. What the CDC has been clearly reluctantly dragged into admitting is that these vaccines are altering menstruation in women, both women that are premenopausal, so this includes the young women that you're talking about that are college age, as well as causing postmenopausal women to start menstruating. The thing that controls menstruation is the ovaries, and our little girls are born with all of the ova, all of the eggs they will ever have in their entire life. And what we do know from the very limited amount of data that has been released is that these the synthetic fat part, the catenic lipids, that slips the RNA into the cells, it seems to have an affinity for the ovaries. So we know that one of the components of these vaccines that's synthetic, never been seen before in humans, not, you know, this is entirely a manufactured product, has an affinity for the ovaries, and we know that girls are having their menses altered. And what we don't know is what the long-term consequences in terms of reproductive health is going to be, because the FDA didn't force the vaccine developers to do their job.
In the closing minutes here, and again, it is defeatthemandatesdc.com, so you're exactly right. Thank you for correcting me. Defeatthemandatesdc.com with their big rally coming up this weekend. His website, wrmalonemd.com. GlobalCOVIDSummit.org is another. Doctor, what about this manufactured bioweapon? I don't know what you call it, but was this released on purpose or was it released by mistake but then spread? What are your thoughts on this?
So there's no way at this point to, unless somebody was to fess up and come out, there's no way to distinguish between those two. There was some early people that showed up sick. But what we do have is a situation we now know, thanks to the major and the Veritas disclosure, that the NIH had sponsored a kind of an odd Rube Goldberg experiment, if you remember Rube Goldberg, like Mousetrap, if you ever played that game as a kid.
Yes.
These contrived series of things that make no sense, but might seem sensical to somebody. What they did was they were trying to develop a vaccine for bats, so that the bats would not be able to evolve a coronavirus to infect humans. And as an intermediate step in developing this bat vaccine, they produced viruses through gain-of-function research that would be much more highly infectious in humans. And they thought they could then modify those viruses so that they would only infect bats. But they didn't get there. Whether it was because of some lab worker got infected or some dead monkey or rat or whatever was sold out the back door for the Wuhan meat market, we'll never know. But somehow this intermediate stage of development of a virus, you know, ostensibly vaccine for bats that Tony Fauci funded, but DARPA would not fund because they thought it was high risk.
Wow.
And they hadn't mitigated the risks. I mean, it's all, the smoking gun is there.
And we'll be right back with more with Dr. Malone right after this break. Don't go away.
welcome back. Glad you're with us. We're going to hurry along, go right back to our interview with Dr. Robert Malone in hopes of leaving some time for the interview I did with the Attorney General of Texas related to what's happening to Texas that will impact all of us. The inability for the Attorney General to investigate voter fraud. Corrupt DAs in some of the bigger cities, who many say are backed by George Soros, who will encourage it and turn a blind eye to it and do nothing about it, and then the Attorney General can do nothing. This is the strange case coming out of Texas, and the Attorney General came onto my broadcast with me last night to try to awaken not only Texans, but all Americans, because it impacts federal elections. I want to have time for that. So let's return to my interview with Dr. Robert Malone.
The mainstream press doesn't want to touch it.
How does Fauci,
right there.
How does Fauci avoid not being charged?
Well, he is J. Edgar Hoover. He has developed enormous political power over time. He controls the whole biomedical complex infrastructure throughout our universities. That's why our universities are so cowed in all of this, is because if they go against Tony, he retaliates. He operates like a mafioso and has for decades.
Final question, Dr. Malone, because it's the middle of the night where you are. You've been very gracious, and I'll plug your websites again one more time. Tell me about your thoughts on ivermectin, please.
So ivermectin is an interesting case. I was on the fence on this one for a long time. I was the editor of trying to advance Pierre Corey's review on ivermectin. And the data, to my eye, the data are fairly compelling. The case that is most overt that many people mention is the fact that Uttar Pradesh and the surrounding provinces in India have just crushed the epidemic. And there was speculation that this was by basically the strategy that Peter Navarro has been advocating for, pushing out a large amount of drug across the whole area. They did it as part of kits that they deployed for people to start taking drugs. And there's a pulse oximeter and other zinc in there, an antibiotic. But we could never get confirmation about what was actually in those kits that was spread all over Uttar Pradesh that caused them to be able to crush the pandemic in the way that they have. And then just the other day, a colleague of mine returned from India, and I'd asked her to try to find any kind of photographic evidence for what was in those kits. And I was finally able to post an image of one of those kits, and it clearly demonstrates that ivermectin is part of that. Now, for my own self, I had long COVID, and I was prescribed by a colleague, Dr. Merrill Nass, ivermectin for my long COVID. And it had been months and months and months, and I had very little stamina. Mm-hmm. I couldn't breathe very well. And I took the two courses of ivermectin. On the second day that I took it, I was in Monterey, hiking along the Pacific, hiking along Big Sur,
right.
And I suddenly had energy that I'd never had for months and months on day two of taking the ivermectin.
Wow.
And that is the only thing that finally cleared my long COVID. I've heard this, so one of my business colleagues has an injured son. He is a Navy SEAL, extremely high-performing individual, and after he cleared the Navy SEAL school, this is a guy that could knock off push-ups or 3-mile run in his sleep, practically. He had previously been infected and just shrugged it off. He took the J&J jab, and he could no longer do 50 push-ups. He could no longer complete a 3-mile run. He was looking at the rest of his career being destroyed as a military officer. And he had been selected for flight school.
Wow.
He took a long course of COVID, and a long course of ivermectin, it resolved his symptoms, and he's able to meet his physicals and carry on with flight school now.
Wow.
So, there's just lots and lots of these reports that ivermectin made a big difference in people's lives, and yet the government is actively trashing it.
Yes.
And it's hard to make sense out of that without resorting to conflict of interest of Merck, Pfizer, etc., because they were rolling out their new drugs.
Wow. Fascinating interview. I want to plug the websites again.
And I'll plug the websites while I switch to the interview with the Attorney General. The website for his rally this weekend, and we're going to try to find a way to make sure that we can record some of it and grab some of it.
It's defeatthemandatesdc.com. Defeatthemandatesdc.com. And you heard him say they're expecting maybe 800,000 people. Pretty remarkable. His normal website is rwmalonemd.com. rwmalonemd.com. All right, let's quickly run over to an interview I did right after that one with the Attorney General of Texas.
Tonight we're joined by the Attorney General of Texas, the Honorable Ken Paxton. Sir, welcome to Lindell TV. Thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to talk to you about something that's going on in Texas that's very concerning, and that is related to some changes in your laws there that could have a big impact on your ability to investigate crime, including voter crime. Can you speak to us about that tonight, sir?
Yeah, so in 1951, the Texas legislature, pursuant to the Constitution of Texas, granted the Attorney General's office the ability to prosecute voter fraud, probably because local DAs were not doing it. So we've been doing that. We have probably 500 different counts going right now. A lot of those are mail-in ballot frauds. And for some reason, the Court of Criminal Appeals, which is we have a dual system in Texas. They are the ones that deal with criminal matters. The Texas Supreme Court deals with civil matters. They overrule that 1951 statute, stopping me now and any future attorney general from prosecuting voter fraud, which means that local DAs in Travis County, which is Austin, Bexar County, which is San Antonio, Harris County, which is Houston, who have been put in place by George Soros, will put us in a position where we would no longer prosecute voter fraud. And I think it will not take long for us to lose a state, potentially by this November.
Okay, that's a lot. Okay, we got to break this down for the lay people. Since 1951, there's been a statute that allows the Attorney General to investigate things, including voter fraud. Is that what you said?
Yes, specifically related to voter fraud. The district attorneys in Texas have the ability to investigate, prosecute every other matter, which I think is a problem. But we at least have the ability to do voter fraud, which allows us to hold people accountable, when in reality, if that is actually stands, which they're the highest court, we're asking them to hear this again, because if they don't overrule this, their own decision, we've got some real issues we're going to have to deal with in Texas.
So, I mean, this is not hyperbole when I ask you this question. It's not a statement, it's a question. The question is this. If this is allowed to stand, this could greatly end Texas as we know it, could it not?
Look, I am pretty sure that it will not take long, whether it's this November or 2 years from now or 4 years, it will not take long for them to win these counties. I mean, think about it. We won Texas. Trump won by about 620,000 votes last time. Harris County tried to mail out 2.5 million ballots last time. We stopped them. Travis County tried to mail out over 1 million ballots. There is no doubt in my mind that this was a strategy, that they waited. These guys, they're 9 members of this Court of Criminal Appeals. They're all Republican. It was an 8-1 vote. And they did it after the filing deadline so no one could file against them in the Republican primary for the March primary.
Okay, wait a minute. That's confusing. Did you just say the Court of Criminal Appeals is made up of all Republicans?
It's shocking. Some of this had to be planned for, I believe, a long time, because you've got the DAs in place. Now the court inexplicably overrules their own precedent, overrules Texas Supreme Court precedent, overrules a 1951 statute, and ignores a provision in the Constitution allowing the legislature to create laws as it relates to my responsibility in the state.
Is this making big news in Texas tonight?
It was done on December 15th. The filing deadline was December 13th. They did it right before Christmas, right after the filing deadline. Of course, we have a March primary. Only one of the 9 has an opponent. So no, it wasn't covered. I've been speaking out as much as I can. I'm trying to make congressmen aware. I'm trying to make senators aware. I'm trying to make everybody aware so that they will call the Court of Criminal Appeals and ask for this motion to be reheard, that it be decided a different way.
In fact, I think we have a graphic that we're going to put on the screen right now. I'll put it up there later when you leave as well. It is the mailing address for the Court of Criminal Appeals. It's their phone number. And I'll give that, it's there now, but I'll put it up after the Attorney General leaves as well. So folks, if you want to get a pen and a piece of paper, I'm going to put that information up there as well, and you can let them know what you think about this. Let me read, if I could, sir, from I guess it's an article today, Town Hall, by Chris Salcedo, if I'm saying that correctly.
Salcedo.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. 2022 is off to a bad start, courtesy of the Court of Criminal Appeals. Let me read a paragraph or two and have you respond. A few weeks ago, the Court of Criminal Appeals handed down an 8-1 decision in the State versus Stevens, declaring unconstitutional a statute given the Texas Attorney General, my guest right now, authority to, quote, prosecute a criminal offense prescribed by the election laws of this state, end quote. That statute, which has been around for several decades, has allowed Texas Attorneys General to doggedly pursue election integrity. And so now we're hearing tonight that this is not, this is at risk here. First, this article lists several points. First, the criminal court, the Court of Criminal Appeals decision is illogical. It is illogical. Why would they even do this?
You know, I don't know. It was an 8-1 decision. Only one Republican voted the right way, a guy named Kevin Urie. Everybody else went the wrong way. I mean, this seemed very well planned because they waited till the filing deadline was over. They did it right before Christmas. And, of course, our election's in November. If this does everything that Joe Biden wanted to do nationally, this is the backdoor way to take Texas. If you take Texas, we have 5 members of the Texas Supreme Court up this time out of 9. Let's just say they win those 5 and they take my seat. We're done. We'll never get it back.
And again, I got to clarify because the audience, I'm sure, has got their jaw on the ground. This was done by Republicans. Is that right again?
Yes, but the reality is most people don't know these Republicans. The district attorneys are the ones that are involved in electing these people. Nobody pays attention to the Court of Criminal Appeals. They should, but people just don't know these people. They could be Republicans. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. They say they are. But this ruling makes me very suspicious to some of the members of the court.
Okay, so you just are saying that these people are put there by the district attorneys.
No, what I'm saying is they are elected, but the district attorneys are the ones that pay attention. They're the ones that fund them, and they're the ones that care about this decision because now they have nobody overseeing them. They can do whatever they want under state law. They can't be – district attorneys can allow crimes to be committed, whether it's voter fraud or any other crime, and there's nobody that can do anything about it. If they allow it, it's done.
Okay, but they help fund it. Wow. Okay, so tell me how much you think – because you've mentioned the name, and I agree – how much do you think George Soros is involved here in Texas?
Amazing. He has done, I would give him a lot of credit for thinking this thing through for probably a decade because he came in counties that Republicans could never win in. We had the DA of Bexar County was a pretty good Democrat. He would prosecute. You know, I didn't agree with him on everything. Same with the DA in Travis County. And George Soros funded their opponents to take out Democrats who were prosecuting. So now he has people in place who won't prosecute almost any crime. Of course, if you're a Republican, you might get prosecuted, but if you're committing regular crimes, you may never be prosecuted, and voter fraud is one of those crimes now that's off the table.
So this, again, no hyperbole, this is an existential threat to the state of Texas.
It's an existential threat to the state of Texas and to the entire country, because if Texas goes Democrat, we will have a one-party country. Texas will be one party. The whole country will be one party. They won't need to pass H.R. 1 because it's already done.
All right, 1-800-347-9829. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions on both these interviews. Is that shocking or what? And the Republicans are, the so-called Republicans are doing that in Texas. Again, this goes back to Carol Quigley, 1966, Tragedy and Hope. He said the two parties are really one. I think we're finding that out, right? And George Soros is there creating all the havoc he can. People say, well, I'm tired of the liberalism in New York or California. I'll move to Texas. I'll move to Florida. And what are they doing? Destroying all these states. 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347-9829. Phone line's now open. right, let's go to the phone lines. Dick, you were emailing with me today, and I said, Dick, why don't you call into the show? And so I'm glad you did. Dick, go ahead and tell our audience what you were telling me on the on email today.
Yes, thank you, Brandon. Well, yesterday we heard all about Robert Spencer talking about the episode at the synagogue, and there have been a number of articles talking about the perpetrator coming from England in the last few weeks to America from a location which is very, very much of a stronghold, no-go place in England, where the Deobandi, which is a kind of purist Islam organization, holds sway. All the mosques are Deobandi. So this gentleman was a Deobandi operative, and he came into America to terrorize the synagogue. The reason it's interesting is there was one person who was very, very much helping the world understand Deobandi, and that was our friend Philip Haney. I just wanted to try to connect a couple of dots for your audience. Deobandi are a very, very large organization. They are a parallel group to the Muslim Brotherhood. Philip Haney knew so much about the Muslim Brotherhood, but he also specialized in the Deobandis who were coming into America and committing crimes. So Philip Haney alerted people about the Deobandis who eventually massacred people in San Bernardino, Orlando, etc. His evidence was in the database, and Barack Obama under Jay Johnson took out Philip's data. So the Obama administration was actively supporting not chasing down bad guys like the Deobandis who were in America. The FBI knew about San Bernardino. They knew about Orlando before it happened. They knew about Garland, Texas. The FBI, again, a great article by Sundance in the Last Refuge database or website. The FBI enabled the terrorists to come to Garland and basically attempt to kill Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller. The FBI knew about these other cases. The FBI knew about Fort Hood. The FBI knew about Fast and Furious. So the FBI is potentially functioning as a state police state for the federal government, much the way the KGB does in Russia historically and even to today. So let's go back to the Deobandi. The only person who spoke about the Deobandi being an international threat, really in any large capability, was Philip Haney. Philip Haney and James Phelps wrote articles that the Indian government published in their internal intelligence magazines to warn the Indian people about the Deobandis and how dangerous they were to the country of India. They emanated out of Pakistan. Philip Haney taught us that the Deobandi are the Taliban. The Taliban, Afghanistan, that is the Deobandis. So, again, Philip was the enabler for us to learn about that. Philip Haney was also, at the time of his death, we know, interviewing victims from Orlando and San Bernardino. So, again, he was focusing on the Deobandi. Philip Haney was on the way back to work for the Homeland Security under Ken Cuccinelli and Donald Trump. We know that from Louis Gohmert, who said that into the record at the House of Representatives. So Philip Haney, the major person highlighting the danger of the Deobandi, is on his way back to Washington, D.C. to go to work to try to clean up the swamp, including the people in the swamp who are collaborators with the Deobandi, and Philip gets shot. So the question is it rational to ask the question if the FBI could facilitate and allow terrorists to function in America, including Deobandi terrorists in Orlando and San Bernardino, if the FBI and Homeland Security could allow a Deobandi from England to come into America and terrorize a synagogue in Texas, could the FBI, knowing what Philip Haney was going to do when he came back to Washington, could the FBI have facilitated some type of an assassin, perhaps a Deobandi assassin, to end the life of Philip Haney?
And I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. And I think what I'm going to do, Dick, over the next day or so is start pulling out some of the old audios of Phil on the Deobandi and start playing those. Dick, I'm so glad you called in today. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Call back in. Let's, for the sake of fairness to everybody, let me run quickly to George. George in Florida, thank you for calling in, George.
Oh, hi. Hey, great. I can't say enough about how happy I am with all the work you're all doing.
Thank you,
God
sir.
God bless you all.
Thank you.
Boy, I have a lot. I'm just going to run through and see if you can keep up. Hey, everybody wants to talk about gun control. I hope they start with disarming the Fed. As far as the Texas Attorney General is concerned, I don't want to be mean, but kind of like shame on you guys for not grabbing onto Mike Lindell back around Thanksgiving. Maybe timing is everything, right?
Mm.
But another question is, what can non-Texas residents do about this? Because you know, this is something that only people in Texas can really call their legislatures and deal with.
Actually, let me answer that for the sake of time real quick, so grab a few more calls. Everyone should be calling the state legislature. The attorney general said many of the state legislators don't know about this. So you in Florida, George, know something some of them who are in power in Texas don't know. So they should be calling the state legislature. They should be calling every member they can, emailing them, and then sending them a link. And you'll find that full interview on my website at WVWTV.com. Just go to WVWTV.com, email it to every member of the state legislature you can in Texas, and say, I know I don't live in Texas, but this impacts federal elections, which affects all of us. So absolutely you can make your voice heard. And the attorney general later in the interview, I didn't play it all, was saying that. All Americans should be making their voice heard on this. Thank you, George. Let's run to JC in Florida. JC, thanks for calling in, JC. Line 3.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Yes, sir. You're on.
So, you know, the voting legislation and the way voting happens, it's all in the Constitution. There are enumerated powers from the state. How come our legislative bodies aren't emphasizing that? The only way these laws can be changed is by a constitutional amendment if it's in the Constitution.
Why aren't they
emphasizing this?
Because most of them don't know the law. But most of them don't know the Constitution. I think it's Article 2, Section 2. We've gone through it. We've read it on the air. It is the legislators that are supposed to be involved in the election, the Electoral College. It is a state's rights issue. You're absolutely right. It's not supposed to be controlled by the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, the Governor. These people are not supposed to be in there fooling around and changing the laws unless they go through the proper process and the equal balance of power. Separate but equal. You're absolutely right. And it's because a lot of them don't even know their own state constitution, much less the federal, the U.S. Let's go to Danny from New Mexico. Danny, thanks for calling in line 4. Go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm a big fan of Robert Malone. Make sure you check out his Telegram channel. He's got a lot of good information on there. And if you have the chance, next time ask him about hemorrhagic fever in China and how it's looking like that's being modified, or at least is the new COVID form, and what's going to happen when the Olympics are held there?
Danny, I heard him mention that. I wish I had asked him that. He was talking about the bleeding out of the eyes and the nose and another variant. I mean, absolutely. We've been trying to get secondary confirmation of these reports that about 20 million were being locked down in China over this. Absolutely great question. I will get him back on. He said he'd come back on, and we'll get into that with him next time. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on VCY America.